Richard, we were talking about the Walmartization of America, and I wanted you to pick up with that thought again.
Sure. I actually crunched with my team the numbers on jobs in America, not over the past few years, over the course of the past century. And it's startling when you look at this. In the United States today, we have about 22 million jobs, more or less those blue-collar jobs that you were talking about that my dad had, that you could work in a factory or do construction and support a family. And about 10 million of those are factory work. The rest are construction or truck driving, moving things around, logistics. We then have another 35 million or so relatively high-paying jobs. Your job, George, in broadcasting, my job as a researcher, jobs in healthcare, in doctoring, the doctors, educators, business, finance, lawyers, and all of this. And those jobs pay relatively well. And then, though, the preponderance of jobs in America, 62 million jobs, three times the number in manufacturing, roughly, or more, are in these lower-wage, lower-skill service work. They're the people who take care of our aging parents, the people, if we use daycare, who take care of our kids, who wait on us when we go to restaurants. You know, we take our dry clean. They do our dry cleaning for us. They give us a haircut. If we're a woman, they give us a manicure. They sell us our clothes or sell us our groceries. Those jobs pay on average a third of what the professional job, the white-collar job, pays, and half of what a manufacturing worker makes. Now, in the country, which galls me, we see these jobs as relegated to the dustbin of our economy and the dustbin of history. We believe that they were always preordained throughout all of history and will always be, to turn a phrase, crappy, low-paid work.
Right.
Well, my father had an interesting tale to tell about his job. And what he told me is, Rich, before when I got my job in the 30s in a factory, I had a bad job. He said, you know, it took nine of us, your granddad, your grandma, my six brothers and sisters and me, to make one family wage. But when I came back from the war, Rich, all of a sudden, and I'm saying this for emphasis, as if by magic, I had a good job paying high wages with benefits that I could support a family, buy a home, and put you guys, my two boys, Richard and Robert, through college. We made factory jobs good jobs. There were reasons for that we can talk about if we'd like. But one of the things that I've been all over our leadership in Washington, our governors, our mayors, is that we have to make our service work good jobs. We're not going to grow enough manufacturing jobs for people. Not everyone's going to have a college degree and or can become a lawyer or doctor. There are 60 million people working in low wage, and many of them working harder than anyone knows. And we have to do something to increase the quality of that work. And I think it's simple, actually. I think we can take the same techniques that made our factories hum, the same techniques of continuous improvement and engaging workers in their work, the same techniques of letting people contribute ideas on the job that powered manufacturing in our heyday, and we can apply them in this service work, and we can make the work more productive and more efficient. You know, it's the last great frontier of inefficiency in our economy where we don't apply the principles of quality management and high performance. We can make those jobs higher paying, good paying jobs, and they can boost the productivity of the economy. But I'll tell you, there is absolute dead space in Washington, D.C. on this issue. They'll talk and they'll moan and groan about the outsourcing of manufacturing jobs and the need to bring them back when they won't and they can't. And they won't even mention the fact that we can upgrade the 62 million jobs that Americans toil in, making not a family wage, not even a wage that can support a single individual in many cases.
But something happened, Richard, after World War II that occurred over the last several years that wasn't happening then, and that was these jobs that your father had, that my dad had, most of them now are gone because they're manufactured in other countries. They weren't doing that after World War II. After World War II, everything was being done in the United States. We were the manufacturer of the world. Those are gone now. I don't think they're coming back, are they?
No. The sad fact is, they will not come back. It reminds me, and I talk about this in the book, and it reminds me of when we moved from an agrarian country to a factory country. And, you know, there was a time a century ago when more than 50%, at the turn of the 20th century, 50% of Americans worked in or around farms. And we said to ourselves, my God, how can we ever be a country and be successful if our people aren't working on our farms? That how in the factories where jobs were horrendous. I mean, these were the kind of jobs that William Blake in England called work in the satanic mills. They paid bare, not even a minimum wage. People worked 12 and 15 and 16-hour days, 7 days a week, could not make ends meet. In my own father's case, 9 people working in factories to make 1 family living wage. So we made factory work good work. We undertook as a country to elevate that work, to exalt the blue-collar worker, to make sure that those factories had productivity. Those jobs have now been outsourced or robotized away. And it's so cheap. You know, I had my students look at this. It's hard to believe the jobs we have are surviving because it's just so darn cheap to make things in China. But these service jobs and what folks, I think, can understand and hopefully will understand, it's hard to offshore these jobs. Now, some of them, like even a drive-through operator could potentially be located in India. But the guy who cuts your hair, the guy who gives your wife a manicure, the fella who takes care of your or a woman who takes care of your aging parents, someone who works in a grocery store, those jobs are rooted in a particular location. They are rooted in our geography. So we're going to have to do what we did with manufacturing, and we're going to have to say that we can professionalize that work, we can organize that work, we can make that work better, and we can pay people a living wage. And you know, what I'm finding is particularly with new people, immigrants like my parents and grandparents, these less skilled people, these are the port of entry jobs that are equivalent to my dad's job in a factory. They're to our time what blue-collar was to my dad and our grandparents' time. We have to make that job decent work, work with dignity, and work with high pay. We can't count out 62 million Americans. We just, I mean, then we don't have a country left. If we say these 62 million jobs are just bad jobs and we can't be creative enough to make them good jobs, there's not much we can do to save our country. We'll be a country of haves and have-nots, a country of class inequality, and a country that won't grow.
That's
something we have to do.
And if you have a country between have and have-nots, you have a problem. You have a huge social problem.
And I think I think it can be put back together. But I certainly think even since you and I, we talked about this last time a couple of years ago, and we saw it in the rancorous political debate. We saw it in the so-called red and blue America. We saw it in the fragmenting of our political discourse. Think about in just the past couple of years how much we were talking about it, but others weren't, how much worse that's become. And I said, at bottom of this is a new class divide between the haves and the have-nots, between people who have it good and people who are feeling scared and anxious and don't know where their future is. So I'm worried.